Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. Today is Humpity Hump Day, and it is a typical New England rainy, cloudy, chilly day, and I'm so looking forward to finally buying a permanent house so that I can have a fireplace, because that would be quite lovely today. I'm actually extremely excited about our guest today, and I cannot wait to get him on, but I wanted to make sure that everybody was updated in regards to next week's show as well, and I'm pulling that up. Dun, dun, dun. Let's see, who do we have on next week? Ah, we have Genevieve De La Casse. She is called the Genie Coach. She's a writer, speaker, coach, and radio host, and she's quite passionate. If you get a chance to go on to my events on Facebook and check her out, her videos are really quite inspirational, and she will be on next week. Today, let's see, I believe Amy's on.
How are you doing?
Hi, how are you? I had to unmute you. Sorry. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just relaxing today, taking advantage of the kind of rainy day, but the sun's trying to peek out, so it's not too bad.
Well, I have great news. We have Anthony Mandel on. He is, I ran across his book and I got so excited because he's going to try to teach us how to take a right turn when we take a left turn in our brain. And because of my busy schedule and chaos and mayhem, this will be quite interesting to see if he can untangle me. His book At Left Brain, Turn Right, An Uncommon Path to Shutting Up Your Inner Critic, Giving Fear the Finger, and Having an Amazing Life. When I saw it, you knew I was all over that, chasing, trying to get him on the show. So it's going to be a perfect way to end May, don't you think?
Yes.
All right. Let me pull him on. Anthony, are you there?
Hi, you guys. I'm here.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm sorry that it's cold and rainy in New England. It's not quite sunny yet here, but it will be.
Yeah, you got to send me some of your sunshine. I know. I was there a few weeks ago for the grilled cheese cook-off in L.A., and that was so much fun, and I'm lying in the grass going, oh, I'm going to bring this home.
I didn't even know there was a grilled cheese cook-off. Amazing.
Oh, we actually made the Sunday morning show. What is that? I think it's called Sunday morning, actually. It was huge.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Grilled cheese cook-off. People were very competitive in regards to how you put the cheese in the bread and how you cook it.
Grilled cheese.
That's right. Crazy
nice.
Fun. Love L.A. So, Anthony, I stumbled across your book accidentally. I just thought you were a really cool author, motivational coach person, and then I dug in further, and you're really quite something. So tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, you're very kind. I guess I'm a multi-hyphenate. You know, I hope the saying "jack of all trades, master of none" doesn't apply. I mean, I do a lot of stuff. I wear many hats. I'm a writer and a director and a producer and an actor, and I have a very successful acting studio here in L.A. and a school in New York as well, and we just opened a branch in London and Vancouver. So we've gone global, baby. So it's really fun and exciting, and basically all the things that I'm doing kind of come out of the work that the book is about, and like a lot of what I lecture on and my philosophies about creativity. So it all really kind of comes out of the work I've been sort of experimenting with actors at my studio.
So how did you start this? Again, I found your book, got really giddy. I'm like, if this guy can untwist my brain, he's hired. Thousands of
no
people
pressure.
Will hire you. No pressure. But how did you get started in this work, in this field?
Well, I mean, I really, like I said, it predominantly started working with primarily with actors, although, you know, the book is not an acting book, and my work has, you know, much longer ramifications and outreach to all artists, really. That's what the book is all about. But I found that for me to really start, I mean, I guess my insights occurred just primarily working with actors, and now, like 15 years later, I realized that I have a lot of science, kind of, there's a lot of neuroscience and a lot of social research science that kind of has been backing up a lot of the things that I've been saying, that I wasn't ever really smart enough to understand science in that way, but like it's pretty exciting and vindicating to, for me to like have explored ways of getting people out of their heads and more into their body and more into their feelings and being more creative and expressed. And now finding that because of a lot of brain neuroscience and brain scans, technology that has enabled us to like look at patternings of the brain has kind of supported a lot of that work. So, you know, and I always try to just, you don't have to be a scientist to understand my work, nor do you have to be an actor. It's really like really applicable for everybody, and it's really easy and it's kind of fun. So, I mean, I think that's really what it should be about. It doesn't need to be, like I talk about in the book, like a brain drain train. You know,
right.
We already, I think, we suffer from that a little bit in our culture, where we overthink things down to the ground to the point where we often don't take action, or we become paralyzed with the fear and the worry of something that may or may not occur in the future, and it immobilizes us and keeps us from taking action. So, a lot of the work I do is just, like I said, getting us out of our head and getting us more in the moment.
It's very difficult. And as a life coach, it's incredibly difficult to get people out of their head. And I'm human too. So if there are certain things that if I get stuck, I get stuck. So what kinds of things do you do that you want to talk about without giving the full book away? Because I really think.
Yeah, no, for sure.
What kinds of things do you do to help coach people out of getting, you know, they're definitely roadblocks for people, no matter who you are, what the subject is. So give us some examples.
I think it depends on, you know, maybe specifically what we're talking about, whether we're talking about getting more creative and like, following an idea that we have, or maybe it could be, but let's just talk about when we get stuck in life about something that we begin to obsess about in our head. I think like the science behind that is that we create neural grooves. So there's just, it's like a switchboard basically. And I mean, I should also say that when I say, you know, the book is called That Left Brain Turn Right, I'm not in any way saying that, you know, the left brain is muhaha, the terrible part of our brain, and the right, you know, it's basically both hemispheres communicate one another. We need them both. They're both essential to, it's not black and white. They both are creative hemispheres at one degree. I'm really talking about when we get overloaded in the cerebral, critical, analytical, you know, judgmental part of us. And that part is generated by the left brain, right? So I just wanted to make sure we make that distinction. But so I think, like, for example, a lot of the work that I'm maybe helping people realize is that I think because we think thoughts on a repetitive basis, that, and the neurological support shows that they become habituated, and habituated thoughts become a belief, but we often just act out of those beliefs or out of those thoughts without really stopping and really examining, is this true? Is it healthy? Where does this come from? Why do I think this? And then that's the first step. I mean, it's really that simple, like really starting to do an inventory of the things that we tell ourselves, because somewhere along our path in life, we began to sort of replay those records that somebody told us, that our parents told us, that our teachers told us, or that we heard on the playground, and now we're 20 or 30 or 40 years old, and we're still living out of those tapes. So I think the first thing is you have to realize that we are actually the master. It's like we are the master of our own mind. It's not the other way around. So I think that's one of the simplest ways is when you catch yourself sort of on a feedback loop, you just stop yourself and you have the awareness that it's sort of just doing itself. You know, ultimately we can create new neural grooves. Like you can, it's something that you tell yourself, you know, that you beat yourself up about, you can supplant that by creating a new groove that makes you feel better. I mean, I think it's interesting. We have many of them, you know, and I think the work is, I don't think they fully go away, but I think we can learn to minimize the noise in the head so that it mm-hmm. stops keeping us from taking action in life.
I use, when I coach and do my motivational speaking, I have a blue racket that's got glitter on it, and it has the words, no way. So when those negative words pop in, and your mind's just a highway, and you either hold on to what you want to hold on to or you let go, and that process is hard when you're reliving those tapes, like you say. And so I have people visualize this racket where you just knock the words out, you know, and have fun
uh-huh.
with it and just be silly and crazy and like a ballerina or whatever, and, you know, make fun of the words because they're just words. They're really not daggers.
For sure.
They're really not. So what kinds of visualization do you use?
Well, I mean, I think that's what you just said is really one great way. And I think,
yeah.
you know, I for me, a lot of the stuff that I do is also to, it may not be a visualization, but it's also, sometimes it's all awareness based. So also looking at what is the payoff in thinking that thought. You know what I mean? Because I think sometimes
right.
there's sometimes it's habituated and it's unconscious and you don't realize it's like a running commentary in the back of your mind that just is running on and on and on and on. And sometimes we're just not
mm-hmm.
even aware of it, or we are at some level, but it's like a dull ache. And then once you start to just get a little bit more awakened to the fact that it's there, then you can maybe the next step is like realizing, well, what is the payoff in me thinking that I'm ugly or I'm fat or I'm too old or I'm untalented or it's never going to happen for me or I'm never going to find love or, you know, I'm not smart enough or any of the things, permutations of things that we tell ourselves that are, you know, inherently destructive and actually do keep us from the things that we're wanting. I think if you begin to, again, just dissect it and look at it for what it is, you know, you begin to see, oh, well, maybe if I keep, when I keep telling myself that, I don't actually maybe have to step out in the world and get accountable in a new way or be responsible for my own feelings or take a step into doing what I really want to do. You know, there is a payoff in feeling badly about ourselves, you know? So,
do you think that the, you know, with these habitual words that we are, I personally believe, conditioned from a young age to have, and to retrain our brain and to uncondition those thoughts, part of that, I think, is a security blanket. It's safer to not step outside of my box. It's safer to hide in here. It's safer to feel
For
fat
sure.
because this way I have no onus and ownership on going to the gym every day and working out or whatever that process
For sure.
is for
I,
that person.
I think that's beautifully said. I think it also becomes its own vicious circle. You know what I mean? Like if you continue to believe the lies that you tell yourself and then there's a payoff in you believing them, then you never actually have to step out of that circle of comfort to like step into a new level of who you can become. You know, I think it's
right.
a lot about what I talk about in the book is like, it's just really the fear of the unknown. And I think it's so weird. Like, of course, the spirit of who we are, this really quiet, all-knowing, intuitive part of us is here for the adventure. We're here to step into the unknown. We're here to play, like, magnificently and beautifully and to put ourselves out there in a huge, vulnerable way. And so that's the spirit of who I think all humanity is. But then there's the part of us that, again, the egoic part, that wants to keep us from stepping into that. And I think it's just having to retrain ourselves that nothing bad, because it's true, nothing really bad happens in stepping into the unknown. It's just it's you just discover who you are at a different level. And I think, you know, if we look at anything that we've accomplished in life that has value or has meaning or has been something that has really changed us in a positive way, what have we done to get there? It's all required stepping into the unknown. Like, you know, I can just use you and your radio show or, like, the things that you're doing, you know. At some point, it requires us to take a leap. And so what I'm just encouraging people to do is, why aren't we taking a leap more often? And
right.
even if in taking the leap, it doesn't always quite, you know, work out the way we think it's going to work out, in taking the leap, we have access to other things that we wouldn't have had access to had we just stayed in stasis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things that I talk about in my book that will be published someday, whenever I
promise.
Finish the editing process, I know, promise. I actually sent it off to somebody this morning. So,
oh, nice.
With okay. ebook hopes for July, but we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Wow. Anyway, I talk about how we, when I coach and teach, I talk about this place called the emotional quagmire, this swampy place where all of our yuck just builds up and builds up, and we never want to go there. And when we get stuck there with these habitual thoughts and these habitual behaviors, we scare ourselves to the point where we stay there, and we become so afraid of the monsters that we've created or have been created environmentally for us in this quagmire, the EQ. And how even as a child, when I was going through my own adversities, I never understood how we couldn't design wings. Like, we can create these really horrific, amazingly negative, fear-based places, but for whatever reason, we can't seem to find the same amount of energy and the same amount of strength to put wings on our back to get out of the EQ.
That's amazing.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I think that's really amazing. I've talked about that. I think I've lectured about that. I haven't ever said it quite that way. I think that's a really beautiful analogy that, you know, again, I think it's just our comfort level. Like, we expend so much energy to the negative, and because it's become habituated to us, that it actually in the short term feels like to make a leap into something that's, you know, more enjoyable for us or more creative or more empowering or more exciting or, you know, hopeful, it feels like it's kind of pushing a boulder up the hill at first. So it does feel like the energetic
right.
requirement to get to something better is harder than where we are, so we just stay where we are. But I just think that's just like going to the gym. It's like at first it's going to be, yeah, you got to tip the scales onto the other side. But once you've gotten to the other side, then you begin to realize, oh, okay, it's just, It just becomes a little bit easier each time. And I think, again, I think the progress that we make is that, I think my point about all the teachings as well is, like, it's not that we're not going to get triggered. It's not that we're not going to feel feelings that make us not be okay. It's not that we're not going to get scared. It's not that we're not going to get in our head. I'm not advocating denying those parts of ourselves. What I am helping us to realize is that when we get triggered or we take the brain drain train, is as we start to develop a different muscle or a set of muscles that pulls us out of that quicker, then you don't spend 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months being stuck in the undertow. You know what I mean? You can more
right.
quickly get yourself out of the hole that you dug yourself into. And it works. Like, I mean, I really feel like, Rusty, for me, like, when I was, you know, in my 20s, I was quite... it was just, I could see myself getting, part of it, I was just very neurotic, but I would spend an inordinate amount of energy and time being stuck in all the things that I thought would happen, and none of those things have come to pass. And so I've realized,
right.
oh my, you know what I mean? That's the thing about worry, is that, you know, if we look back, like if we could, what's today, May 21st, or I don't even know what today is, but if we look back exactly a year ago today, the things that you were worrying about a year ago today, what happened to those things? Most of those things we don't even remember. So
exactly.
Again, it's sort of, you know, putting things in an emotional context so that we can sort of navigate through them more quickly.
Well, I have to send hugs all the way from New Hampshire because I just love you. High five. You're doing a great job. Why don't you give our audience the virtual high five?
Exactly.
Tell us where we can find you and more information about you. And it's your time to plug yourself.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you can find me at Twitter. You know, you can. I'm on Twitter at Anthony Meindl, M-E-I-N-D-L, all one word. My website is www.anthonymeindl.com. You know, the book you can get anywhere, Amazon. I don't know if we're in actually any bookstores in New Hampshire, but you can certainly get it on Amazon. And then I also post videos, you know, really short videos every Sunday night, Monday morning on my YouTube channel as well. So you can just on YouTube / Anthony Meindl. So, yeah, that's kind of where you can find me.
Yay. All right. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit so we get a full picture of what you've done. So you started out, I'm assuming, as an actor. You wanted to be an actor when you grew up?
Yeah. Yeah, I was acting a lot in my early 20s.
And then you started coaching people who wanted to be actors?
Yeah, I just found myself more interested in all these things that we're talking about. You know, like a more creative exploration of, like, figuring out how we get in our own ways and how to solve those problems. So that and my directing and writing started to take more of the forefront than my own acting. I like
do you
the
think,
problem solve. Like, go ahead.
Do sorry. You think now, you know, I'm assuming you're, what, 28? Do you think now,
years.
With a few years of experience on both sides of the coin, that you are probably more open to your creative process than you were when you were worried and fearful in the beginning?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's
so
actually
something
I lectured on last. Oh, my goodness, yeah, for sure. It's like, I think something that I've learned and also working with actors, like, I think, and I don't know how old you are, but in our 20s, especially as artists, I think we're so dramatic and everything is it's so dramatic.
Yes.
I'm always joking, save the drama for the stage, you know, like, but I think that's also the sort of the mythology that in our 20s we have to be really messed up and it has to be dark and scary and we have to constantly be like an open wound to tap into our artistry, living in chaos. You know how teens and 20-year-olds are.
I'm living with a couple of 20-year-olds and that
sounds
like
go.
My
there
life right go. About now. Yep.
But I think that's also the science. But the science has also proven that we are not optimally expressed. We're not really working at our full potential when we're living in that chaos. And so for me, I've learned, and what I'm helping actors do is, you know, why can't we be more healthy and make, you know, more positive reinforcement choices in our work, in our creative lives, than constantly living in the suffering? I don't like that idea of, like, we have to, you know, like, God bless the people that, you know, were affected by those tornadoes in Oklahoma. That's suffering. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Having to deal with calamity, that's part of being on this planet, that's suffering. But I don't think artistry and the exploration of ourselves needs to be so dramatic.
Exactly.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out because I'm 370 years old and I want to
tell any of what I just said to a teenager and they're going to be like, yeah, you don't get it, Mom. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. The eye roll door slam. You don't understand me.
Oh,
well, tell
God,
me about you.
Right.
I don't want to talk to you. Yeah. Been there.
Eye roll door slam.
The mug and the
t-shirt.
I have one more to go.
Talk to the hand.
So, exactly. Now I lost my question. Keep going. Keep talking
about
it.
No, you were talking about, sorry, I just the visuals
no,
of the teenagers
it was perfect.
Yelling at you. It was funny.
It was perfect. Oh, my question was, especially in regards to your line of work, which is more of the acting creative studio kind of, you know, competitive, cutthroat in a lot of ways, So there's a lot more pressure, and there's a lot more criticism, and there's a lot more, well, you're not skinny enough, or you're not fat enough. I'm sure they don't say that often, but, you know, you're not tall enough, you don't have purple eyes. You know, there's a lot of criticism that goes within your industry. How it must be much harder for you to coach these kids, and I'm going to say kids because it probably are.
Yeah, there some of them are. Yeah, some of them are.
To kind of, you know, tactically avoid
those pieces. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think my short answer is yes. I mean, that is the business. The business itself can be quite, really difficult. You know, I don't like to create paradigms of, like, limitation.
Right.
And I just think that's, it's sort of the obstacles and the beautiful challenges we face being in this business, right? But I think at one level, like some of the teenagers that I teach that are, you know, become, you know, big stars, or I have some teenagers now that I think are going to be the wave of sort of the next generation of big stars. Like, when I watch them, I'm like, oh my goodness, they are hardwired and put together in a way that's so adult that I've never seen before. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm always telling them, when I was your age, I was like, ooh, you know.
And they roll their eyes.
Yeah, but they just get things. They just get things in a different way. So, you know, I feel like my philosophy is that what I'm really trying to instill is that our value is achieved from the inner. It's not from the outer. And I do think the business has a tendency of, like, you know, chewing
poking
people up and spitting them out. Yeah, like, you know, everybody has a designated shelf life. And if you're taught that you're only meaningful because you have a big box office opening, or you're hot, or you are 18 years old, what happens when those things change? So I really am trying to create self-worth based on who they are and how they create, not what they create and the externals. So that's kind of my mission. And
so really planting a real seed of stability Yeah, that's great.
Well, listen, I think it's for everybody too, myself included. Like, you know, it's interesting you said that, you know, you're writing your book, and I think it's amazing, like, for people to just create and do it their own way. It took me 8 years to write my book until it finally came out. And I, you know, I think the point is what I feel like I'm an advocate for artists of all kinds, and I'm all about not listening to the limitations and the sort of the corporatization of things that
mm-hmm.
keep us from creating and believing that we're good enough, because we're constantly comparing ourselves to sort of this idealized model or this myth of something that doesn't exist. For women, they open these magazines and everybody is a size zero. Or for guys, they watch this billboard and, you know, they feel like they have to be this kind of ultra alpha male superhero. Or, you know, I think these things don't exist. And I think when we compare ourselves to this sort of fanatical perpetuation of what success looks like, we constantly beat ourselves up, because it's like a dog chasing its tail. It's not real. So
yeah, these words are not real. So if you had the perfect opportunity in the perfect world, and you had absolutely no limitations, no blocks, no nothing, how would you change the way we go about doing things in regards to self-esteem? It's a tough question.
Well, that is a tough question, but I guess my answer is very sort of a Buddhist response, because in the sense that I think the thing that I'm trying to get us to understand is that we need the parts, the shadow part of us, or the part of us that beats ourselves up, although there can be an unhealthy sort of preponderance of dwelling in that 24/7. But I think the
mm-hmm.
interesting thing is when we begin to have a more healthy relationship with both sides of who we are, we understand that it's important for us to have one aspect of us in order to create change. Like, I couldn't have, like, I can't teach these things or have experienced something different in my life without having gone through the stuff that I had gone through. And so I think we're living in a, you know, the duality of what we're living in is I need to go through parts of myself that I judge or that I'm hard on or that I beat myself up for in order to get to the light part. There is no light without the dark. And so I think it's really beginning to, it's sort of embracing all parts and realizing all parts are creating the whole. I mean, I think, again, that's a part of the problem with our culture is that we're not okay with having feelings that are not okay or that aren't perfect or everything is so, you know, what's my word, like sugar-coated. And that's not how you get there authentically. Because at some point, if you're not dealing with your stuff, it's going to come out in some weird way. Whether you go postal or you have a nervous breakdown or so I think again it's having a healthier understanding of how it's all put together, you know? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You're just reiterating everything that I teach on this show, and Amy, who's my co-host, who's in the background here. Amy and I are very deep believers of this, and you have to, you're given a path, you walk that path, you're going to get bruises, you're going to get cuts and scrapes, you're going to have that contrast in order to appreciate, in hopes, the theory, in order to appreciate the light. And for me personally, I think we as a community and as a society, as a world in as a whole, we pay more attention to the criticisms and the negativities, and we publicize and advertise and market that insecurities and the fears, and we pay way more attention to that than we do more of the glorious light pieces. And as a mother,
for sure.
I really try to embrace it both with my daughter. And show her, you know, I show her poverty, but I also, she hangs out with Buddhist monks. So she gets the extremes in that sense. And she's an incredibly compassionate, wonderful little white light. But I don't think as a community or a society or as a world, as a whole, we really focus enough on the light, which gives us more darkness. But that's my theory.
Well,
you also have to recognize, I think another problem is we all think that we all should be on the exact same level at the same time. Recognizing that we're all on the same path, we're just all at different levels, and it's okay. I think for me that's been a big realization in the past year for me that, you know, I'm just going to go where, you know, just trust in the universe bringing me where I need to be and what I need to do instead of worrying about what everyone expects from me. Does that make sense? I'm trying to get people to think on that level and to be okay where they are and their spiritual development or their, you know, but be aware that, you know, stress and anxiety creates, you know, physical disharmony too. So there's two sides to everything, and you have to work on both sides.
I was going to say, like, yeah, I think that's great. I think, like, I like sometimes think of it like we're all on elevators and we're all going up. Just some of us are on different floors. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
So and I think when we begin to realize that, then it's really just between you and you in this game of life. You know what I mean? It's like
you take a lot of pressure off.
You know, I think I talk about this in the book, like the whole compare and despair game. Again, I think our culture likes to do that. I think we like to set ourselves up to compare ourselves to what success and other people having what we think we need to have in order to be happy. And then ultimately you get that and you realize, oh, that's not what brings me happiness. So
exactly.
I think you said it, like, it's really, you, where you are on your journey is where you are on your journey.
Right, and be okay with that and know that, you know, in trusting that you're going to be and have the outcome you want, you know, and that's living in the moment, and that's hard for people to do.
Yeah.
You know, but that's where, you know, that's where people, and I, and you were talking, it's funny, the people in their 20s, I just had that conversation with somebody a couple of days ago about, you know, how, you know, looking back at how I was in my 20s, too, you know, compared, and it's like, I looked at my daughter, I'm like, I just don't want you to take 20 years to learn what I learned, you know, but I also have to let her have that experience,
too.
So it's kind of that struggle, you know, but it's been an experience.
It's interesting. It kind of touches on the point I was saying, though, too, is like, we can't create something other without going through whatever we have to go through. You know what I mean? Like, so she's going to have to learn, you know, to me, the sadness or the tragedy is when we go through that stuff, but we don't get the lesson. And that's when it becomes a burden and our lives don't really.
Yeah, that's
totally it. Is like, I think the lessons are there for all of us. We just have to get the lessons when we get them.
Yeah, absolutely right.
So, you are listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
I'm Amy.
And we have Anthony on the line, and I just adore him philosophically. He's just reiterating everything that we've done in 70-some-odd shows. And he has this great book. I've already lost the name. What is it, Anthony?
At left brain turn right.
There you go. See, my brain turned left. So call in if you have any questions. We have about 17 minutes left to the show, and the number here is 347-205-9443. And Anthony, if you can give us where we can find you, it's your second chance to plug in. Hello?
Oh, am I here?
Hey, you are. You're here.
Oh, sorry. Wait, what did you say?
Plug yourself, baby.
Sorry.
Plug yourself.
Oh,
that's
plug
okay.
Myself.
Where did
we
find
you? That kind of plugging. Sorry, I just had like a brain lapse. You can go to www.anthonymeindl.com or you can find me on Twitter at Anthony Meindl, M-E-I-N-D-L. My videos are posted on YouTube / Anthony Meindl, and you can find the book pretty much anywhere. I mean, if you Google it or you Amazon it, you know, you can order it that way.
All right, great.
Okay.
Now, if I understand correctly, you just got back from Australia. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'm going to Australia on Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday. Okay. Now, is this a motivational speaking engagement, or?
Yeah, no, I'm going to teach, and I've been going to Sydney and Melbourne the last 3 years, and, you know, eventually I'm probably going to open a school there as well. So we'll see. I'm really looking forward to going down under, and, you know, it's been really exciting opening a school in London and Vancouver this year, and just really taking this message, you know, out to the world internationally.
Did you ever think that this is what you were going to be when you grew up?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is a great question. Because, you know, I do have moments. I was just thinking yesterday. Like, I have moments when I was a young kid. I was obsessed with, like, positive sayings and the whole kind of, you know, Norman Vincent Peale and the whole, you know, positive thinking movement and the power of the mind. And that really blows my mind, like, that those seeds were planted really early on. So yes, at some level, even though I wouldn't be able to articulate it back then, I was always very much interested in the sort of the human potential, you know, this possibility of who we can become as people. And then I think, you know, my life is an example of kind of what I talk about in the book, which is I think it's very important to say yes to how life starts to unfold. And we have ideas about what we think. You know, I think I was just lecturing about this last night, Patanjali, the famous yoga, he basically was the founder of yoga. He basically said 2,000 years ago, I'm paraphrasing, but he said that beliefs are created by our ideas of what we think reality should be. And he said faith is accepting reality as it unfolds. And so I really think that I've been an example of, like, I had an idea in my 20s that I was only going to be an actor. And then when other things started presenting themselves, had I said no to them, I wouldn't even be talking to you right now. I would still be, living my life only as an actor. And there's nothing wrong with that. I find that when we open ourselves up to, again, what creativity really wants to show us and potential, then you have access to possibility you never thought. I never thought that this part of my life would be, it's just weird. It's like, at one level, I set those seeds many years ago, but I never, ever thought that this is what it would look like.
But the path is an amazing journey. I mean, everybody, life is just amazing and unfolding. And I think people need to slow down, text less, step back and really view their journey to appreciate it. Like the three of us on today here live, we've all gone through that a few times. I'm dumbfounded and just incredibly humbled with some of the things that I've done and some of the doors that have opened up and 90,000 fan base, which is huge just on a whim. It's very humbling. But again, like you said, if I were to think about last May 22nd or whatever today is, I don't even remember what I was doing.
Yeah, you don't know how to get there. Yeah, I think that's the point about creativity as well, is that I think we become obsessed with the hows. And I talk about let the hows become the wows, which is like, we don't have to figure it all out. It's some things are not to be figured out. They're to be lived and experienced. Then you go for the ride and you see where it takes you. And then when you get to somewhere, then you can look back and then have the aha or then things kind of fall into place and you're able to put them together from a new vantage point. But I think people are so unwilling oftentimes because of our own agendas and our own ideas of what we think something is supposed to look like to just wave, ride the wave. I mean, I really think I'm a yes man. I do feel like that has really opened up in my life. Like, the people that I work with, I generally say yes to things in life. I'm like, sure, why not? What's the worst that can happen? I actually have access to so many more things when I say yes than if I say no. I mean, no, saying no is a closed system. When you say no to something, I mean, just think, it really does, even the word just stops any sort of forward moving momentum or energy into possibility. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't ideas of no's can become a yes. Like if you are, you're in a situation that is no longer working for you or, personal, or you're feeling like you're being compromised in some way and somebody's asking you to do something and you're saying no to them, but internally it feels like a yes. You get what I'm saying? Like you're really acknowledging your higher self and you're doing something for yourself. That's a really empowered yes. But I'm talking about in life when, I don't know, we're asked to do something that could be fun or different or exciting or could be a little bit scary, and we say no. I don't know. I just find it very, very interesting how we get in our own way.
We do get in our own way, and what I use when I coach is what would the seedling do if the seedling always said no? Would it ever come out of its shell? Would it ever push up through the ground? Would it ever, pushing up through the ground must be a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
You don't know where you're going. You don't see sun. You're in complete darkness. It's very uncomfortable. Mm. You have pressure. You're trying to dig yourself up so that you can become a flower or a tree or whatever your seedling self is. What happens if it said no? It's not coming out.
Yeah. Well, I think that also sort of bears sort of significance to that whole analogy of the seed and its own potential to grow. Like, I think that that's, again, it's codified in our DNA to want to seek growth, to want to seek adventure, to want to seek blossoming. Like, that, just, there is that seed of awakening within all of us, for sure. And I think, again, it's, I mean, you just said it better. It's like, you go through whatever you got to go through to get there. But I think that that's an amazing analogy of, we're all codified to do that. That is our, that's our basic nature, I think, as human beings. I really do think that's the right brain potential stuff that I think we're all hardwired to live in. You know, it's just, can you minimize the fear so that you can get to the other side? That's really what it is.
Absolutely. And nobody said it was going to be easy. Nobody said that, you know, you're not going to skin your knees. And nobody said you're not going to have doubts. And you surround yourself with people that are actually genuinely supportive. I think that's key.
Yeah.
So that you can bounce those doubts off of them. Acknowledge your wins. You can ask Amy. Whenever I find that somebody wrote an article about me, I'm like, Amy, I did that, you know, and it's giddy and humbling and exciting. It's like, I can't believe that, you know. I never thought I'd be this person. I think part of me did, but wasn't confident at the time. And really, really acknowledge that negative beliefs and negative thought patterns, they're normal, but your mind's a highway. Just let them drive through. Don't own them.
Yeah.
Don't let them stay at your hotel in your mind. Because when you do that, they're like cockroaches. They don't go away, you know?
Yeah, they're just kind of road signs along the path, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I just do my little ballet thing with my little racket and smack them and make fun of them and have fun with it. But they're just words. So this is the part of the show that adds a little bit more pressure to you, my friend, but it sounds like you can take it. If there was one thing that you could share internationally with God knows how many people, because I don't even look at the reports anymore, one thing that you find the most important to share, what would it be? What's
one
your advice,
thing,
your wisdom?
Wait,
advice,
one thing,
wisdom, anything?
The one thing that is the most important thing to share, say it again.
Exactly. What is the one thing that you...
I would say yourself. I think the most important thing to share is this amazing heart-centered self of who we all are. Like, I think we take for granted that or discount or forget that just showing up in somebody's life and sharing from the heart and being with someone and I mean, really connecting with somebody, to me, is really what it's all about. And I think it's an interesting challenge because of technology nowadays, we're so hardwired to our phones and to other gadgets that we're losing that sense of what does it feel like to really connect with someone, really...
Right.
Share ourselves. And
you know,
I think
the vibration.
I think when we begin to really share who we are, like pockmarks and all, that we give other people the permission to share and be okay with where they are. And I think that's why I think the arts are so important, because they, you know, I can only speak of my profession, but actors share, they reflect back to humanity what it means to be human. But what I'm always encouraging actors is, don't just do that on the stage or on TV or in the movies. Like, that is our responsibility. And again, our birthright and our codified in our DNA is to be out in the world in a way in which our presence can evoke possibility and joy and awakening in another person. It only comes from connection. It really just goes to show how it is only by being connected to other people that anything is possible on the planet. I mean, it's technology even is only available because of people who came together and connected with ideas to create technology. So I think it's really important that we don't ever lose sight of that.
to unautomate and become real and authentic and in the same physical space as we can be. And I think that's terribly important as well.
I was just thinking whenever some of the work that I have to do, requires me having, if I'm writing something, I have to be on my own or in my own space, and that's part of the creative process. But I do find sometimes, when I'm disconnected from the world at large, as soon as I get out into the world and start connecting with people, even if they're strangers, I start to feel more hopeful and excited and possible, and it starts to make me think about things. And I think that's important. We get out of our own world and we start putting the focus and the awareness on another. So it becomes very selfless. I think that's the thing about the left brain, is that when we get stuck in our left brain parts of ourselves, the parts that beat ourselves up, or we say, I'm not good enough, or I'm this enough, or why should I even bother? Nobody's going to want to read this book, or whatever it is the more we stay in that space, it's very difficult to actually be out in the world. And so when we actually are out in the world, you find that, you're less in that negative headspace. Do you know what I mean? You can't be there and be with somebody at the same time. So I think, again, it's just coming down to sharing. It's sharing.
Sharing in a positive way, for sure.
Yeah.
It's funny. My license plate is happy. It's HAPPI. And I'm always smiling and rocking out when I'm driving. And there's this little car with a happy license plate. And people give me peace signs when I drive by. And I'm like, peace. Because it's just a
That's
reminder.
Funny.
Even if you're grumpy, it's like, here comes Miss Happy. Or when you're really in a bad mood, I tell people, duct tape your cheeks. Duct tape them in the other position. Smile. Fake it until you make it. Because
That's
what
right.
that does
fake
when you're walking
you
through the
it.
Store is the grumpy person there that's just as grumpy as you, but you're putting forth the effort and the action to change your attitude, that person, they're going to smile automatically just because you are. You don't even have to have
For
a conversation.
Sure.
But being in that physical
space
with other people.
There's actually been science that's proven that. There's been science that's proven that as well, is that the art of mimicry, that we do it without, it's unconscious, that we do it, we basically take on sort of the physical and facial behaviors and attitudes and postures of people that mirroring, basically. And so, that's, again, the positive effect that we can have on other people.
Can you name three more?
Name three more?
Yeah, we've got about 3 minutes left of the show. So what other things can we, be contagious about?
Well, I think it's important to always, I think you asked me early on in the interview, what can you do to help get yourself out of your head? And I think it's very important for people to just on a daily practice, like they go to the gym or they eat healthy food or whatever it is. I think that it's important for all of us to have downtime for ourselves. Like, you can call it meditation, you can call it silence, you can call it visualization, whatever, it can be yoga, whatever works for you. I think it's really important that we find a space within. I think you have to disconnect from the outer world and recharge. I think it's really important to get connected to the source, and that's all inner. And I think that needs to become, it will really change your life if it becomes part of your daily practice.
Practice, practice, practice. And I will add to that recipe with write. You don't have to be a grammarian. Trust me, I'm not. I'm a grammarian's nightmare. And I'm okay with that. But write.
Exactly.
Write, 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 write. Journal, 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 journal. You can even type it if that's what you want to do. But really owning that inner space, even if it's 5 minutes a day, meditate, go to the gym, take your time out for yourself, but also allow those things to come out of you. Put in, come out, put in, come out. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am grateful that you spent today with us this hour. You are absolutely a delight, and I'm thrilled with your book. It's great work, and keep spreading spreading the good word. Can you tell us one more time as we wrap up where we can find
you? Thanks so much for having me, ladies. That was a really inspiring conversation. Thanks for having me. Just quickly, you can find the book at Left Brain Turn Right anywhere on Amazon, or you can go to www.atleftbrainturnright.com. You can find my work at anthonymeindl.com. M-E-I-N-D-L is my last name, all one word. I'm on Twitter at anthonymeindl. On YouTube, backslash Anthony Meindl, where my video logs are posted. So, or just Google me. That's the easiest way, maybe.
Just Google me.
Just Google it.
If you can't be Googled, you're in trouble.
Yes, I know, right?
What a world we've created. I'm so grateful. And virtual hug, virtual high five. You are wonderful, and we need a million more of you. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about the date when you open up your new school in Australia, spreading the good virtue of faith in self and gratitude.
Let us know when you're around in our neck of the woods.
That's
yes,
right. If
I
you're
will.
Ever in the Bostonian neck of the woods, let us know. We'll take you out.
Okay.
We'll treat you.
I'd love to come. I love Boston. I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah, it's Boston's still Boston. Still a fun place to be. But
thanks, ladies, so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All thank right. you so much, Anthony.
Thank
Have
you.
A great day. Blessings
okay,
to you and yours.
You too. Blessings.
Bye,
okay.
dear.
Bye.
Wow. See, Amy, I told you when I found this book, I knew I would fall in love with him and just want to bottle him up and keep him in my pocket because he's just fabulous.
My husband always says, all I do is get in the car and drive left. And I'm chuckling through this whole thing, you know, the name of his book, because if you think about the left brain stuff he was talking about, that's exactly what Todd was struggling with. Theoretically, even though it had really nothing to do with, you know, what he was portraying in the book, I'm chuckling underneath because that was what I was thinking, you know, the whole right-left brain thing. And it's very interesting. And, I'm glad that there's people like him putting that information out there for people to really absorb it, because it's very important.
Well, and I love how he was able to articulate in a way that is very easy and very user-friendly. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of those coaching techniques that definitely need to be acknowledged and put up on a pedestal.
Yes.
And obviously he's worked very hard and has become extremely successful because of his philosophy. And what a great role model.
Right.
Love it.
Right.
So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
I'm Amy.
And next week we have Genevieve de la Zay, if I'm pronouncing her name right. It should be de la Cave, a.k.a. the Genie Coach. She's a writer, speaker, coach, and radio host who loves passionate conversations and ventures. So that will be a wonderful show. We are booked until August. I've been booking away with this radio show. It's been crazy, but as always, knowing how much I love all of you and just am inspired by you as we get the 90-second call, feel free to email me or check me out on Facebook, facebook.com/celiacroads, and let me know who you want to hear. We have some inspirational people coming up, and the show is for you, by you, and I'm thrilled to walk this path with you. As always, I love you. I think you're beautiful. I think you're creative. Go out there and smile today. And if you happen to see the happy car, wave, peace sign. It's all good. Until next week, have a happity, happity, happity hump day. And peace out. Love you all.
Okay. Till next time.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.